श्रीला गुरुदेव की जय, श्रीमन महाप्रभु की जय, श्री हरि नाम संकीर्तन की जय, श्री श्री रवजी गोपाल जी की जय, ग्रंथराज श्रीमद भागवतम की जय, श्री वेणुगीत की जय, गौर भक्त वृंद की जय, गौर प्रमान हरि हरि सो वेलकम टू ऑल ऑफ यू. Good evening. And here we are continuing with our series of lectures on Sri Venugit, the song of the flute, with the gopis singing about the song of the flute, their own song about the flute, from the village to the forest or to the world, reaching even us. So we are in our meeting number 16. And today we will be studying verse number 15. Let's see if we complete it today. I'm not so sure, but we will try our best. But first, let's make some brief recap of what we studied yesterday. Verse number 14, where the gopis are absorbing their attention in the direction of the birds. Some of the birds who were not included in previous verses, like the peacock and others. So one gopi addresses another gopi, telling her, Amba, O mother. And we try to explain that, no? And how in this forest all these birds are rising to the different top of trees and entering into very specific branches. And with closed eyes, they receive the sound of the flute. And they start in silence to drink such sweet vibrations. Not being attracted to any other sound, basically. And this gopi compares them to sages, to great munis. They behave like great munis, basically. Surely they are on the same level as great munis, which may mean they behave like munis, or as we mentioned, the opposite also. So we explained a little bit yesterday the content of this verse, the implications of the word amba, why one gopi is calling another mother, while all of them basically share the same age, different reasons for that. All of them connected to, of course, their deep emotional situation in which they are here. And the connection they made between the munis and the birds, making, okay, these birds are behaving like munis, they are mona, they are in silence, they live in the forest, they eat fruits and roots, they go naked around life, from loincloth, basically, mainly. But we are not sure if these birds are behaving like munis, or if great munis like the kumars and so on have taken the form of birds to come to Vrindavan and to drink the sound of the flute. No, they sneaked into Braj in one form or another to have that opportunity that is not available anywhere else, even with other forms of Krishna outside of the Braj. And also, our acharyas made different commentaries on the idea of these birds rising to some branches of the tree and making some analogy. And the tree is the Vedas with all its propositions, with all its fruits. And these birds are rising above certain branches and certain fruits to get to the highest branch, which represents what the Bhagavatam is giving, and to taste the fruit of Krishna's flute song, which is the ultimate fruit of the Bhagavatam, basically, no? The converging point of Braja Lila, Krishna Lila, as we know. The whole Bhagavatam is very meticulously unfolded, first canto, second canto, in a way that gradually, in a very organic way, it reaches 10th canto and takes us by the hand to the Braja Lila in a way that we surely will not misunderstand that. And then, just in case to assure that we have not misunderstood the Rasa Lila, the whole Braja Lila, sorry, and specifically the Rasa Lila, then we have how many, no? Like half of the 10th canto and 11th and 12th canto reflecting back on what's there in the Braja Lila. So we have the first 9 cantos to prepare us for the Braja Lila, and then we have 2.5 cantos to reflect back on that and assure we properly understood that. So somehow the acharyas have made this parallel here with the birds going to branches compared to sages upgrading their sagehood I'm entering into reaching higher branches of the Vedas, higher proposals, Karmakant, Jnanakant, Upashanakant, Bhakti. Or as Guru Maharaj will say, Atato Dharma Jignyasa, Atato Brahma Jignyasa, Atato Rasa Jignyasa. Different ways of escalating into the in the different proposals. From which they can see Krishna best. That's another way of saying. The verse, reach the best branch to see Krishna better, is another way of saying they take shelter in the particular branch of the Vedic tree from which they can have the best possible darshan of Krishna. And in the Bhagavatam we find that that unique presentation of Bhagavan in the form of Swayam Bhagavan, Krishna's two Bhagavan, Swayam. Also, there was some special glorification of the sound of the flute, only seen, tat uditam, only seen in Krishna. Many other people playing different instruments and creating different effects, but what Krishna does with his flute, it's only him, seen in him, in the Braj. Again, outside of Braj, Mathura Dwarka, he leaves his flute with his friends in Vrindavan. He's not as inspired as to play the flute outside of Vrindavan, basically. Not enough udipan to create in him that reaction. Also, some idea that we share is that the birds were climbing to the branches as to get from the shoots of the branches as ropes, as not to fall because of the song that soon will come because of the sound of the flute, basically. And these shoots at the same time coming from the branches, Jiva Goswami, are the sattvic vibhavs of the trees. Ecstatic response, like horripilation, you say, hairs standing on end. Okay, the trees are doing that by expressing new shoots. And the trees and the trees are in ecstasy doing that, and the birds are in ecstasy almost to fall, and they take from the other ecstatic response of the tree, taking the shoots so as to sustain themselves or something. And not being able to say anything else but Krishna, 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 or anything in connection to Venu, Katha, conversations about the flute. And, of course, as usual, the conclusion for the gopis is, our birth as humans, ladies here in Braj, is condemned by the Creator. We let's pray and find out what we have to do to be born as these fortunate birds. So we can have unrestricted darshan and so on of Krishna without any concern. So, that's a brief recap from yesterday's lecture. And today the gopis will direct the divine madness, their absorption into the direction of the rivers. So now we will go to the water element, Jal. So this verse 15, where the rivers of Braj will be described as embracing Krishna's lotus feet with their waves, with their arm-like waves, and presenting to him offerings of lotuses and to his lotus feet, basically. So the gopis will witness this particular darshan in their trance. So let's recite the mantra, the sloka in Sanskrit first, typical meter.
Nadyastada tadupadharya mukunda gitam Avarta lakshita mano bhava bhakna vegaha Alingana sthagita murmi bhujair murarir Ghrinanti pada jugalam kamalopaharaha.
So, the translation of the verse says, when the rivers hear the flute song of Krishna, their minds begin to desire him. And thus the flow of their currents is broken, and their waters are agitated, moving around in whirlpools. Then, with the arms of their waves, the rivers embrace Murari's lotus feet, and, holding on to them, present offerings of lotus flowers. So again, every word, the resection is like a particular picture of the frame of the whole movie the gopis are seeing. We will try to pay attention to each one of these sections. So let's first of all, as usual, give the translation, the word by word translation, and then we will try to unpack the content. So first line, Nadyas tadat upadharya mukunda gitam. So Nadyaha is a plural for river, Nadi. Nadi, sometimes you hear Nadi, means river also. So Nadyaha means rivers, so referring to the rivers of Braj. So Nadya Tada. Tada means at that time. Once upon a time. At that time. Tad. That means in this case tat. Like tat tvamasi. You are that. So that. Upadharya means attentively hearing. And hearing what? Mukunda Gitam. In this case, the gopis do not say Beno Gitam, they say Mukunda Gitam, which means the song of Mukunda. Another way of saying the song of Mukunda's flute. We will explain why they didn't say Beno Gitam, like they used to be saying in all the verses, basically. So that's the first line. Still, the main characters of the verse are not appearing in detail. I mean, rivers are mentioned, but the whole dynamics are not yet unfolded. So the rivers in this moment are attentively hearing. I mean, the rivers are attentively hearing Mukunda's song, flute song. And at that time, it's a little bit different order. Now we go to the second line. Abarta lakshita mano bhava bhagna vega. To abarta means by their whirlpools. So part of the response of the rivers start to manifest. They get agitated. As one may get agitated by hearing the flute, the river show up. The way of showing agitation is not presenting shoots like the trees, but creating whirlpools. That's their own way of showing their bhav, sattvika bhav. So avarta, we explain. Lakshita means manifest. So they manifest whirlpools. Mana, manobhava, or manahabhava. Manobhava means, in general, love. By love, or due to love. And we will explain which type of love the rivers are expressing. Bhagna vegaha. Bhagna means broken, and vegaha means their currents. So not only whirlpools appear as a symptom, but their current got broken. In other words, it starts to flow in another direction, which that's not usually the case outside of Vrindavan. That's the second line. So the symptoms start to be expressed one after the other. What's the reply? The consequence of the rivers hearing the flute, whirlpools due to love and broken current. So let's go to the third line. Alingana stagitam murmi bhujair murarir. So alingana stagitam means covered by an embrace. And urmi bhujair, the general meaning, of course, means by the arms of their waves. The word bhuja can mean arms. You have heard chatur bhuja, dvi bhuja. But also bhuja can mean in Sanskrit waves. The same word for the two things. So somehow the two are put together in the idea of their wave, their arm-like waves. Are there waves or are there arms? We don't know. The books are wondering. No? So with their waves acting like arms, the rivers are alingana stagitam, covering him with an embrace. I mean, covering his feet, as we will see, from all directions. Like you wanted to do the other day with Kamalaksha when he was leaving. No. Embrace him. Yeah. No. Next time you have to be more trained and from all directions. So he doesn't have a place to... No? If someone comes east, west, north, south, I mean, like, what to do? No? You have to break your bow. So in this way, the river was coming and embracing Krishna's lotus feet from all directions. Flowing from all the directions necessary to do that embrace. And last line... To add some extra feature here, Grinanti Pada Jugalam Kamalopahara. Because still it is not say embracing Krishna how. So Grinanti means hold, they hold. So the rivers with the waters, with the waves, they hold what? Pada Jugalam. So Pada Jugalam means what? Pada? What does it mean, Pada? Okay. And Jugala?
Yeah.
Sorry? In this case, near to couple will be pair. So referring to the pair of feet, the 2 feet of Krishna. So embracing the 2 feet, basically. Holding, Grinanti means holding. So first covering the feet, and then it's like... Because one thing is you embrace something or someone, and then you remain there. No? You hold the person. So that's the sequence. No, there's a sweet sequence here. Pada Jugalam. And finally, this is not all, Kamala Uparaha. Uparaha. Sorry. So Kamala means, you may imagine, lotus. So they are carrying an offering of lotus flowers. So not only they are expressing whirlpools, they are changing, breaking their current, they are embracing lotus feet of Krishna, holding those feet, and to crown the whole approach, presenting their best possible paraphernalia that they have available, the rivers, in the form of lotus flowers. So it's a very, again, very nice sequence on how each word is unfolding, everything that is happening, and how the gopis are saying. So let's try to say something about this, and let's see where we end, lost and found. So I will be reading different commentaries today, because there are many nice things that our acharyas have said. So I'll begin with Sanatan Goswami, who is our senior commentator, starting from the times of Mahaprabhu. His first one to write a commentary on the Bhagavatam in Gaudiya Sampradaya properly. His Brihad Bhashyam Toshin. So he connects, as usual, this verse with the previous. Remember, all of the verses are like strung in a thread, in a sequence. So one gopi says, Sanatan Goswami says, Baladev Vidyabhushan in his commentary will mention other gopis speak here, like making a point. Some gopis who have not spoken till now. That's the only thing we know. So Sanatan Goswami said, one gopi said, one of the others, enough of speaking about conscious beings. No? Already. No? They spoke about cows, deer, devis, devas, birds. So enough of that particular tattva, no? Enough of that particular department, category. Can the good fortune of rivers, though they consist of non-conscious water, be described? No? So enough of conscious beings. Let's direct our attention to inert entities. So-called inert, we will see they are not inert at all, how they are reacting. But at least externally, under classical function, generally water is not considered like as a conscious being with personality and so on, but we see that this is not the case. Especially in Braj, everything is personified. Like Sila Siamraj like to say, in our culture, everything has personality. That means we are personalists. We are not impersonalists, means we like to see everything in terms of its individuality, its personality, its relatableness. I mean, I've just created one word, no problem. You got the idea. No? Their potential for establishing an interaction. So that's how a personalist think. It's always filtering reality in the good sense of the term by seeing everything as relatable. How to establish, how everything has a connection with the center. That's Sambandha. Sambandha means Krishna is the center and everything has a connection with him. So how to see the connection, the interrelationship that everything has with its center, including, of course, ourselves. So in that sense, everything has a purpose, has an, if you will, a personality, a potential of offering, being engaged in seva. So anyhow, the gopis say, can the good fortune of rivers, though they consist of non-conscious water, be described? So in this way, the gopis direct their attention to the water of Vrindavan, specifically the rivers. And we will see how the acharyas will focus on certain specific rivers in Braj. You may imagine which one to begin with. So here in this verse, the word tat, as we mentioned, is used. Tat means that. No? So in this verse, the gopis are not mentioning Benugitam. They're saying tat, that, referring to the song of the flute. Because, I mean, they already are considerably bewildered at this point, but they fear somehow. They are trying, as we know, to hide their feelings, no? In their parakiya bhav, in their abahita mood of trying to gop, to hide their feelings. So it's not working that much, but somehow they have managed to not, they are not just overtly singing the verses, we love Krishna, we feel this for him. They are not doing that. They're just pointing at every speech in Braj. But fearing, maybe if we mention again Benu Gita, we already did this in so many verses, who knows what will happen, which reaction will... Instead of saying Benu Gita, let's say that. No? If that helps to dilute a little bit our bewilderment. But it won't happen, as we will see. No? But also they say in the verse Mukunda Gita. No? So it's not saying Benu Gita, but Mukunda Gita, that song of Mukunda. At the same time, again, they try to avoid something, but the solution to the problem is worse than the problem itself. Srila Jiva Goswami comments in this connection also. He says, unable even to conceal their emotions like before, due to the immenseness of rag, and rag means attachment, or rag means also the melodies of the flute. So due to an excess of love, or due to an excess of what's coming in the form of the rags through the flute, the gopis fancifully imagine their own lot, even in comparison to a non-conscious entity, while continuously giving a description only in conformity with their own taste. In other words, even if they speak about inert objects, they cannot avoid projecting their own madhurya bhav. And they hear speaking, the rivers are attracted romantically to Krishna. So first and foremost, as we already mentioned, even though each of the inhabitants of Braj has some feeling for Krishna, first and foremost, what's happening here is the gopis are projecting their own feelings and trying to hide their feelings by throwing that to every speech in Vrindavan. Again, something is happening in them, but the gopis mostly is a way of them trying not to make that evident, because again, their psychology is such that everything has to be expressed in indirect terms, crooked terms. That's how love moves, romantic love in particular. Seeing the river's waves, Jiva Goswami continues, seeing the river's waves as arms, bhuja, through which they decorate Krishna with lotuses and then embrace his feet. So that's how the gopis project, rivers are attracted to Krishna romantically. They are running and embracing Krishna, like we would like to do, basically. I mean, of course, that's what the gopis want to do. They would like just to run and embrace Krishna to their full satisfaction. So again, bhuja means waves, and bhuja means arms. So the rivers, the gopis are seeing rivers with waves, but rivers with arms. Again, personified. There's a personified entity there embracing Krishna, and Krishna receiving that. So again, on one side we know that the gopis, in one sense, if you want, they are, you can say the gopis are the most renounced and self-controlled personalities that you can imagine. I mean, when they come as sadhakas, it's overwhelming, the level of renunciation and detachment from the world they show. So they are really gambhira, they are really grave, self-controlled. And even, again, after a lengthy discussion, we are already in verse, 15, almost three-quarters of the Venu Gita, and even the effect of the Venu Gita is evident in every speech in Braj, the gopis still have not expressed their own internal feelings overtly, as I mentioned. They are not just like directly, clearly. They are struggling to the rivers, the flute, the deer, the cows, the this, the that. No? So they are totally anxious in Purvarag, in this separation when they have not met Krishna yet. But even though they would like to meet him and express, they keep hiding that due to the nature of their love and using metaphors and projecting their love and ascribing that to the environment. And in this case, again, describing, okay, the rivers, inert water, are experiencing symptoms of romantic madhurya bhav, incredible, affected by the sound of the flute, which again, first and foremost, is what's happening to them. We will speak about what the river feels. Of course, everyone feels a lot in Vrindavan, but gopis cannot avoid that, taking their thing like if you stole something and someone is about to catch you and you throw that to someone else, and look there, and the other looks at you. Somehow, no? They are trying to take the attention somewhere else, because again, they shouldn't be feeling that in terms of the social dynamics of Vrindavan. They have family, they have duties to perform, and they are in love with Krishna. As everyone in Vrindavan, again, even the so-called bad guys, the gopis' husbands, as we spoke the other day. So, there are many important points here. For example, the acharyas mentioned that generally the nature of the river, here the rivers are mentioned, the nature of a river is to flow. A river is not, how to say, stationary, but it's moving. And it's moving in the direction of the ocean. It's converging. Converging point is the ocean. Sometimes poetically, the rivers are expressed as wives and ocean as the husband. So the wives flow in that direction to meet with their beloved husband, basically. So very diligently they rush to meet with her husband. But here in Brajamandal, we see that the rivers are here. They are going in that direction, but Krishna's flute sounds and they change course. They break their current and stop going to their husbands. I imagine you start to see the analogy here with the gopi situation, basically. They change their nature. They have a nature, but the flute of Krishna alters their nature. Creates a total transformation of nature, basically. So they start to flow in an opposite direction. So you can imagine, the gopis see that and they cannot avoid seeing Udipana after Udipana. No? Look, no? Instead of going through their husbands, they are going. And the ocean sees that, the gopis feel, but the husband, although the ocean is not joining his wives, no? The ocean remains there in the ocean, he's not coming to flood Vrindavan. But at least he doesn't say anything. He allows his wife to go. But our husbands, you know how the rest of the story continues. So in the same way, the gopis cannot avoid projecting that, the rivers are not converging into the ocean. They are going to Krishna and doing all that they are doing. And we should do the same. We should flow against nature, against the demands, the expectations of society. We should just run. Remember, they are in Pur Barak. Still, they have not met Krishna. So they are reaching the strength to just go there. That's how the Leela is unfolding, basically. So in this way, the rivers are, there are different things that are being said. Sometimes the rivers change their nature, or sometimes due to the flood, the rivers become stunned and stop moving, or sometimes because of the sound of the flood, the rivers who are liquid become solid. No? They alter their constitution. And all these different things to show. Yeah, the effects of the flute and how much we should be willing to be ourselves transformed by the sound of the flute. Of course, Krishna in the Gita says it's very difficult to change one's acquired nature, but in one sense we have to be transformed. Guru Maharaj always said spiritual life is about change. And sadhana means basically you are diligently making a daily effort to experience transformation. It's not just like status quo. I belong to this group and I'm expected to do this every day, and so I receive my 3 plates of prasad and nobody complains about me or something like that. No, it's a very passionate, sincere, voluntary desire of transformation. That's sadhana. If you embrace sadhana, it's to go through a transformation. So you have to agree with yourself, I want to be transformed. I'm not all that I could be. I know that. And try to think about which will be the best possible version of yourself. And for sure, whatever we can imagine, it's not even close to actually what we can become in the most brightest of the senses. We still do not have a full clear picture of all our potential. That happens when we get close to those who are already there. That's why Srila Siddhar Maharaj will say, Sri Guru is our own potential appearing in front of us. So when you meet Sri Guru, Srila Gurudev, you discover a new horizon, a new reach. You realize, oh my God, I can become all that? And of course, you feel fully committed. Because you say, I never thought that a person could reach such heights. And he will say, not only that, but you are invited to reach these heights. Now we can say, you're so nice, Gurudev, that you are there, so high you are. And say, my duty is to take you with me here. Let's climb up the mountain. So that's beautiful. Then there comes commitment, and we may be a little bit scared at one point, like, oh my God, I am to go there. Because as we always say, sometimes fear is the opposite of faith, or the opposite of love, I would say. And generally we are fearful about those things that we do not know about, the unknown. And generally we relate that with our darkest shadows, if you will, in this unconscious and those corners that we are not willing to inspect too much, because we use the broom there and who knows what, who comes there, some arm comes there, some boy, like, oh, no, let's keep it Let's give the, how, what's the name you give to the tools room there? Like you have like bodega here. Okay, you understand the. So you have the bodega of your subconscious there, huh? Subconscious is like a bodega. So sometimes whatever you don't know where to put this, the bodega, of course. There has to be a room for that, no? For throwing all the things that you don't know what to do with, bodega. And at some point you just are using that for that, and you do not dare even to open the door and expect or clean. And it starts to have a life of its own, the bodega. And different communities start to build there, and you start to hear voices and movements, and it's like, I mean, a separate ashram there. And whenever you have to throw something, you go quickly and you throw and you go running because, I don't know, you see some hand coming there inviting me. So subconscious is like that. You are throwing some stuff that you don't want to have in your face. And I'll throw it to the bodega from there. But at one point, certain circumstances make that appear, and it may be fearful because it's unknown. Again, we do not know what's going on, and whatever we do not know, it generally takes us out of the comfort zone, create this notion of I'm not in control, and if we lack faith in an actual controller, that can be like neurosis, basically. Although that should be the greatest of our pieces, not to know there is a controller and it's not me. I remember always this picture, I shared that once. There was like one Buddhist monk seated in one rock in the middle of a lake, not very like Buddha-like image. And there was a quote saying, "Relax, everything is out of control." Everything is out of your control, basically, the idea. Because generally we feel, I will relax when everything is under control. I mean, that's not the formula for relaxation. It's the formula for relapse, not relax, as we say. So, but my point was, sorry, and I'm going back, and for sure we won't finish the day this way. We are afraid of those things we do not know, and this shadow side may be the main one we sometimes speak about, but actually, interestingly, that's not the biggest part of the things that we may be afraid of, but I would say our brightest potential, we may also be fearful of that. Why? Because it is unknown to us. Just because it's something is unknown, we feel fearful because we don't know what's that. And if we have to compare and put in the scale our darkest shades and our brightest potential, the big part of the equation is always the brightest potential. Now, there's so much more there that all that you can put in that bodega is still something limited, conditioned, narrow, but our brightest potential in terms of bhakti, that's like so much bigger. So maybe we are more afraid, I will say in that sense, considering the proportions, of our brightest potential that of our darkest shadows, interestingly. Only because of the fact that we don't know what's going on there. So again, the role of the guru is trying to nurture us with faith and confidence in the direction of our brightest potential. I mean, while also dealing with the bodega, doing something there, we have to clean the room, Chetudarpana Marjanam. You have to clean the... what it means, Chetudarpana Marjanam. Chitta is basically the unconscious in contemporary terms. And he said, you go and clean the bodega of your subconscious. That's the first example of the first effect of Trinam. But then again, you get a glimpse of all that you can be. And that can be like overwhelming, because we are not accustomed to think of ourselves in terms of all that we can be. Sometimes we are too much like accustomed to just be something, whatever we can strive to be, survival instincts, and this is what I am, and whatever. And you try to feel like in a conformist way to, okay, I'm that. I'm okay, I'm in peace, at peace with that. But actually, you are just half-cooked. No? You're not fully ready for the offering to put in the plate for Dauji. So the sadhus will lovingly take you closer to the fire. No? Cook a little bit more. Not, as Gumara said, not throw to the fire so you burn completely, but gradually so you become fire-like. And gradually we do not become afraid of the fire, but we realize, oh, I can live there. I can get acquainted and accustomed and enter there and live forever. As Guru Maharaj will say, what's happening in the sun planet? How can I enter there? You have to develop a fire-like existence identity. Anyhow, all this in connection to rivers flowing backwards and altering, transforming their nature, and our duty as sadhakas to experience transformation, transmutation. And it's a sustainable, gradual process, not in a way that you feel, this is, I'm going crazy, I'm total anxiety. I mean, that makes sense. But yes, to understand that it's important that we, that would give life and meaning to our day and practice, basically. You know? So here the gopis are shown that highest example. So, going back to the commentaries of this verse, we have Srinath Chakrabarti, the guru of Kavi Karnapur, and he mentioned that the Proda gopis are speaking in this verse. We, some classes before, spoke about three types of prem: Manda, Madhya, and Proda. Weak, middle, and powerful, mature. So he said, here the gopis, the most accomplished, if you will, gopis, maybe he may refer with that, he didn't clarify, but need to see the gopis or whatever. So he says that one gopi says to the other, hey Saki, the river flow has momentum by nature, yet the rivers solidify even their own flow. They change their nature, in connection to what we are speaking. Why can we not give up our patience and shyness too? No. So for the gopis at this point to transgress their nature is to stop being shy and patient and just run after the flute and Krishna. That's how changing nature applies to her, to them in their situation. Of course, for us, it's another thing. Maybe we may need to be more patient and shy. That should be our change of nature in our case. Who knows? And then the term, Srinath Chakrabarti clarified that the term manobhav here, which generally is translated because of love, the rivers reacted as such. Manobhav can be connected with manorata. Manorata means inner longing, or with kama, or romantic passion, basically. So again, the gopis are seeing the rivers of female with romantic attraction towards Krishna. And the whirlpools, again, they imply the agitation of Cupid, the influence of Kamadev, Shmar. So Jiva Goswami comments that, again, as I mentioned, the verse presents a very nice sequence here. First, the rivers with the whirlpools are there, and the whirlpools are so intense that they cut the lotuses that are with their, how do you say, stem. So they cut, the whirlpools express themselves, they cut the lotuses. So as we will see, will be presented. The whirlpools appear, they cut the lotuses, then the rivers approach Krishna, they grasp his feet, and then embrace his feet surrounding him from different parts. And Jiva Goswami says, with water up to his chest by increasing the flow of water. So generally the river is flowing on a certain level. Sometimes you have a flood. You can ask me. I live in an island in Argentina. I can give you experience of that. Water goes like... So here the Jamuna, seeing Krishna, starts to increase to the chest of Krishna, wanting to literally embrace him. So according to Jiva Goswami, it's not only embracing the feet, but a more comprehensive type of embrace. No? Something similar happened, if you remember, when Vasudev took Krishna from Kamsa's prison in Mathura to Vrindavan. He crossed the Jamuna with the baby Krishna on his head. And the Jamuna, it is described, but some commentators start to rise. Because the Jamuna wanted to touch Krishna's feet. But the problem is that Vasudev will drown if that happened. So he started and rise, and Vasudev was with it and taking Krishna. So as some moment, Jamuna like rose and touched Krishna's feet, and when Vasudev was about to drown, Jamuna went down again, so Krishna will be taken. So many times we hear this type of thing, river rising in order to reach Krishna more comprehensively. So here the commentators, all of them basically unanimously agree. When we speak about bodies of water or rivers here, which is the main river we are referring to in Vrindavan? Jamuna Devi ki jai. Kalindi. Krishna, also called Krishna, one name, black, which is some form of the liquid backbone of Vrindavan. And sometimes also they mention Manasi Ganga. Manasa Ganga is one river who is at the feet of Govardhan. But if you want to see it now it's a pond. It's no longer a river. So a pond is not, well, it's not a river. It's not flowing. It's more like quiet. But it is said that in ancient times, Manasa Ganga was a river also. So the acharyas mostly mentioned these two in their commentary. Because if you go to Vrindavan, you won't find that many other rivers there, basically. So mostly Jamuna and Manasa Ganga are mentioned. Getting close when they hear the flute. And Upadharya. Again, Upadharya means hearing with rapt attention. Mukunda Gita, the song of Mukunda's flute. And it is described that song had a raga of the highest bliss. Whatever Krishna was playing, that particular raga was... Because each raga, speaking of raga as a musical composition, intends to deliver a particular rasa, a particular type of, in secular terms, aesthetic experience. If you are a connoisseur, both in the audience and the musician, the success of the performance is that both parties reach to the point of rasa. But they will speak in terms of secular rasa in this case, in those cases. Unlike if you go to a concert, you not necessarily are a Krishna Bhakta. You can be hearing Indian classical music, and if you know how to taste that, and the person who knows how to present that, the unfolding of the whole interaction will be, both will reach that aesthetic delight that they call rasa. Of course, here we are speaking about another type of raga, and therefore another type of rasa as a result of that. And in connection to that comes one of the two names that is mentioned in this verse. So today, again, we'll see, I think, half at least of the verse, and the next time we'll see the next part. Because here also two names of Krishna are mentioned, interestingly. Till now, mostly each verse included one name. Krishna, Govinda, Achyuta, Nanda Nandan. But here you have Mukunda and Murari. Two famous, well-known names of Krishna. So let's share some words before finishing today about Krishna as Mukunda, because that's the first name that appears in the verse. And next class we'll speak about Murari and some other things here. So here comes the name Mukunda into the picture. Why? Because Mukunda, of course, there are many meanings to the word Mukunda, different degrees. And in this verse, the gopis are again speaking in terms of Mukunda Gitam. So the song of Mukunda. In other words, when they are relating the song to Mukunda, they are relating whatever Mukunda means is applicable to the effects of that song. Whatever that song is generating, it has to do with the name Mukunda. You follow? It's not that the gopis just choose a name casually. Let's choose a name that we haven't used yet. Mukunda. No. They are seeing and feeling something, and they find a name of Krishna that perfectly fits with all that is happening at that moment, in many layers of levels, as we will see. Not only one thing. Spontaneously, that name comes. Krishna has unlimited names. Nam namakari bahude. And different names possess different layers of meanings as well. So let's analyze a little bit Mukunda before going to Murari. I will say next meeting. So Mukunda, the most popular name is he who gives liberation. Mukunda. Muk means, comes related to mukti. And Mukunda, da has to do with dadati, which means to give. So he who gives liberation from material affliction, because when you say liberation means liberation from something. No? I mean, I want to be liberated from what? From prison, from kleshas, from anartha, from pain, let's say. No? Like, for example, you have a toothache. No? You need Mukunda there. Well, that's one of the worst things. No? You're feeling so much pain. The only thing you can think of is I want relief here. And of course, generally we are so much accustomed to suffering in this world that whenever we have some relief to the suffering, we feel, I'm so happy. So we confuse relief from suffering with happiness, which are totally two different things, as Kumaraj will say. Zero and positive numbers. Suffering is negative numbers. Stop suffering is zero. Happiness is from one on. But sometimes we are suffering so much, we feel like if I take your, I won't do that, but just giving an example. If I take your head and you put it underwater, no? And I enchant my luck, meanwhile you're there. And when you're just about to die, I take you out for 5 seconds. And you're like, again. And over and over again like this. So those 5 seconds for you are like mukti. Freedom from suffering. I can breathe. But if you are watching as a third person all that situation, oh my God, that's not freedom from anything. That's total misery. I'm giving a grotesque example, but generally many people live a very painful life, and they get so much accustomed to that that for them just, I mean, a weekend of drugs and degradation is like, Monday, again, waiting for you. Go to work and do all the things you don't like to do. No? That's one what you want to say that I like that. He said, people generally during the week, they do things that they hate to do, so they can on the weekend do some things they think they like. But they didn't like that either, basically. No? So again, what must it be to be free from all suffering? I mean, that's something we cannot maybe even think about. What does it mean to be free from a toothache? That's a lot if you are in that situation. From back pain, that's for Madhavi there. But what must it be to be free from suffering altogether? To be free from all the influence of Maya Shakti, from all the gunas and all its effects, all the anarthas, free from samsara. According to our idea, we are not attracted about that, so be careful. I'm just testing you. Because we say, no, mukti, moksha lagutu krit. So many verses we can quote saying mukti is insignificant and we only go bhakti for the sake of bhakti. But if mukti personified comes, knocks your door and say, I offer you immediate freedom of all this. I can take you even to Vaikuntha. Vaikuntha means non-anxiety. I remember once Guru Maharaj quoted that. No, I think someone asked some other devotee, no, if you have the option of going to Vaikuntha right now on the spot, no, the Vishnu Dutas come with their airplanes and say, we can take you just now, right now to Vaikuntha if you want, or you can wait 2 lifetimes, 3 lifetimes and go to Vrindavan. What will you do? Was the question. You can go just now to Vaikuntha. No anxiety. There's no suffering there. There is positive ananda also. I mean, you don't have to reply to me. You reply to yourself. Of course, hopefully, ideally, you say, oh, thank you, I can wait 2 more lifetimes, 3 more life. And I want to go to this particular direction with all respect to the weekend. But the point is that, no? I mean, to be free from all suffering, mukti, yeah, it's totally insignificant in comparison to prem. But it's not that it's insignificant in itself. And that's it. It's the goal of life for most sampradayas, Vaishnava sampradayas. The word prem comes like an afterthought, if you will, of Gaudiya sampradaya. So, of course, when the gopis here, the gopis are saying that, we know the gopis are not concerned about that. Gopis do not care for being free from samsara and all that thing. They are totally happy. As we know, when Krishna showed the Brajavasis, they wanted to know, Krishna, we want to know which will be our next life, our next future, like some sort of, like, how do you say this in English? Bola de cristal in Spanish?
Crystal ball.
But you say like that in English also? Okay. So crystal ball, you can see the future, what will happen. So Krishna did some interesting things that they, well, wow, this Krishna is special, has some power. Krishna, show us our next life. So Krishna gave them like a darshan. And which was their next life? It's like if I put you a mirror in front of you now. What's your next life? And I put you a mirror. And you see all of you here doing what we are doing now, no change, the same thing. So they saw that. They saw themselves
as
whatever. And they were like, oh, great. Incredible. We will keep together in family with our pets and animals in the village. Great. So again, my point, they are not caring by Kuntha liberation because they are beyond that. They are beyond liberation. Prem is post-liberated status. It's a real liberation, if you will. Mukti pade. So, why the gopis are calling Krishna Mukunda? I mean, they do not care for being free from samsara. But they want freedom. They want a certain type of freedom. Mukunda is the one who gives deliverance and freedom. They want to be freed from social concerns, social obligation. They want to run after him, basically. They want to transgress all the Varnashram sensibilities of the Leela. And they will do, as we know. Still at this point, they seem that they are shy and fearful. But that's part of the unfolding of their love, not to help us to further appreciate that. But they are Nitya Siddhas, no? So they are with him already. But eventually that will happen. Krishna will play the flute in Rasa Leela. Right. So they call here Krishna the first level Mukunda. He who gives liberation. The gopis want to be freed from all these social obstacles and duties and just run behind the flute. Also, Mukunda means he who gives, again, da, take the part Mukunda. So Mu means mukti, da means to give, dadati, and here ku comes from the Sanskrit kupshita, and kupshita means distaste, distaste. So he who gives distaste for mukti. So he who gives, of course, distaste for mukti means who gives taste for something above mukti in such a way that mukti seems like laguta, no? Insignificant, the words of Rupa Goswami. In other words, he who bestows the bliss of prem, basically. To the point that the devotees, as Mahaprabhu say, nadanam najanam nasundarim kavitam ba. I don't even care, not only for things of this world, rajas, tamas, sattvas, dharma, artha, kama, but moksha, nirgun, mukti. I don't care. I don't care coming again, over and over again, janmani, janmanishwari, to this world. If only bhavatat bhakti rahai tuki. If I can render hai tuki bhakti and motivated devotion to Hari, please throw me over and over again into samsara. I want that. I want whatever facilitates that. That's how also Vritrasura pray also. Nanaka prishtam nachapara mishtam. Sarbhavomam narasadipatyam najoga siddhir apunar bhavamba samanjasattva virahaya kangshye. He said, I don't want any rule, any kingdom in this world, any sense enjoyment. I don't want mystic powers. I don't want liberation. If any of those things get in the way of my serving my beloved Lord, if that comes and will facilitate my loving service, okay, I accept whatever comes. But if something will get in the way, no thank you. No thank you. No thank you. Machivaya pratitam te salukyadi chatusaya nichanti sevayapuna kutunyat kalavipudam. Says the Bhagavatam. My devotees, Bhagavan is saying, they do not care even for the four types of liberation in Vaikuntha. They only care about serving me in a loving way. What to speak of other attainments which are below Vaikuntha? They don't even care for devotional mukti. Salokya, Sarsti, Samipya, Sarupya. It's not happening for them. Of course, that points to Braj. That's the place where they do not even care for having two extra arms or stuff like that. Because he is Mukunda. He's the one who bestows prem. So the gopis are calling Krishna here Mukunda like that. Not because they do not have prem and they want prem, but in their subjective reality, they feel we don't have enough prem yet to join Krishna's we will like. So, Mukunda, please do your duty, honor your name, give us the necessary strength to join you as we like. And another name, Mukunda, another meaning for Mukunda is Mu, has to do with Mukha. Mukha means face. Mukunda, Kunda refers to the flower. Kunda, there's one flower called Kunda. So, Mukunda means he whose face is like a Kunda flower. He whose face is like a beautiful blossoming flower, no? Whose face is fragrant like a flower, sweet, soft like the petals, attractive And of course, that's all the things that the gopis feel when they see Krishna, look at Krishna's face. So that's a very specific, intimate, more intimate name that they have for Krishna as Mukunda. All of them apply to the situation of the gopis, as you can see, on different levels. So, basically that. And there are some other names, another meanings for Mukunda. If you want, we can share. There are at least one more, which is even more confidential. And it has been given by some acharyas. But Mukunda again means he who frees one from all, who frees one from all obstacles, basically. And in this case, when they say Mukunda Gitam, again, they are referring to the song of Mukunda. So what's the effect of the song of Mukunda? And as we mentioned, as that happened to the devis in the sky, that will happen to the gopis in greater degrees. All the belts loosen. Loosen, you say? And all their ornaments and arrangements, their braids, everything. So he frees them from that. He like enters and frees them from all obstacles. So sometimes even more intimately, say when Krishna joins eventually the gopis, he will free them from all obstacles in the form of clothes and stuff like that. So there are so many layers of understanding Mukunda in connection to what the gopis feel. But again, the gopis are in Parakya Bhav or Abhahita Bhav, this Bhav of hiding. They are not saying all the things they feel about Krishna openly. Oh, Mukunda this, Mukunda that, Mukunda song. They're just saying Mukunda Gitam. The song, if you don't know all the background, we say, oh, they call Krishna Mukunda, and that's the song of it. But the implications of calling him Mukunda and relating that name with the song of the flute and all that is creating in them, they're not saying that openly. But they are so much attuned, you say? They are so much feeling the same thing that when one of the gopis say Mukunda Gitam, all the other gopis immediately understand. What do you mean by Mukunda? All the layers that we have been explaining much more, all the implications of saying Mukunda Gita, all the other gopis immediately sympathize with her emotion. Without the need of, again, announcing that publicly and openly, I'm feeling this, this is the meaning of Mukunda, these are, they do not need to say all that. They're so much, again, connected that just one word is enough for full empathy. And nourishing each other. Bodhayanta parasparam katayantaschamam nitya tusyanti charamanti. That's the very meaning of Sadhu Sangha. At one point, we won't need to say too many things. Just a few words and just looking at each other and being so much attuned in line with a particular ideal, and that will be enough for overflowing our hearts. I remember Guru Maharaj mentioned something like that recently. Regarding one god brother, I think it was Suradas or something his name, who passed away. Guru Maharaj commented something in other contexts, but in this principle about he was really committed to, in that time, to distributing Prabhupada books. This devotee, Suradas, and of course, as well, our Guru Maharaj. So he was expressing how much attuned there were into this, like, passion of serving Prabhupada and pleasing their master. And being totally like dedicated to that particular activity in a real spirit of giving pleasure to the object of our affection. And he will say that sometimes we will look at each other and just seeing ourselves, looking at our eyes, we already knew what was happening in our hearts, what we were feeling by being such dedicated in such a way to our Gurudev. There were no words to explain that. There was just a glance was enough. And giving support and strength to each other and continuing to that absorbed campaign, if you will. So, in this particular situation, a similar principle is going on. One gopi saying, Mukunda Gitam, and all the other gopis are like, no need for words, basically. No? But, well, we share some words trying to explain that silence, if you will. So, I think we can finish here today. We have seen half or less than half of the verse. So tomorrow, no, the day after tomorrow, Monday, we will continue with the second half, where we will analyze the second name of Krishna, which also have many layers of meanings, Murari, and many of the other things that still we have not address in detail in this verse. But for today, we put our Bhagavad discussion to rest here. Bande Nanda Brajastrinam Padarenum Abhikshansaya Samharikatod Gitam Punati Bhuvanatriyam Srila Gurudev Ki Jai Sriman Mahaprabhu Ki Jai Sri Harinam Sankirtan Ki Jai Sri Chidauji Gopal Ki Jai Sri Grantaras Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai Venu Gita Ki Jai Gaur Bhaktavrinda Ki Jai Gaur Prima Ki Jai